Welcome home. We are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive. I positively have the candy cane cash giveaways. Dan, they smell like Santa Claus. They smell like candy canes. We're out here at Gertrude's at the BMA. This place, nothing classes me up. Just being here classes me up.
Yeah, it does that to everybody.
I mean, the people that come in, the air, I'm at Hopkins.
Yeah, yeah.
There's Decca's Gingerbread. There's bourbon. There's
Shields
Hospitality.
The whole interior is beautiful. You walk by the gift shop and it's...
You know, during this time of the year, I could promote your previous play about family and Portuguese and the fire in Rhode Island and all that. And then
about Baltimore, right?
But turns out that you wound up introducing me to my own family here, that John Shields is my cousin, and I did not know that. The first time I talked to you 3 years ago, you're doing this play.
Yeah.
You're like, I know John Shields. He's the nicest man I know. He'll be glad to do it. That'll be a great idea. We'll do the BMA. And I come in and I find out I'm related to him. Now we're like at a sauerkraut and kielbasa level, he and I.
So on your mother's side?
No. My son married his first cousin's daughter.
Okay, I get it. Yeah. Your son married John Shields' first cousin's
daughter.
Okay.
Yeah. John Shields... first cousin.
That puts you in the extended family.
Is my son's mother-in-law.
If it was the Beltway, you'd be on the outer loop.
It's my son's mother-in-law. It's a big deal. Cindy, tell him, right?
Did you hear what I just said? If it was the Beltway, you'd be on the outer loop.
All right. No, I don't know. I'd be inside the Beltway. Somewhere Northern Parkway. I'm Northern Parkway.
Your extended family.
Can I tell you something as a Baltimore transplant today? Coming down here from Towson, I took Argonne Drive over here, and I've never been on Argonne, like, that I'm aware of, behind the stadium, which leads me into No Mean City and your incredible play that you're bringing here that I'm going to stop everything in March.
Well, we hope it's incredible.
So I drove on the top side of Memorial Stadium, and I was a kid that took the 22 bus out of Highland Town, so very familiar with the park and Clifton and then going down 33rd Street and the Alameda and Montebello.
But you were on the north side of the stadium.
Coming over from, let's say, Morgan, Merville, above it or whatever. But I came down the Alameda and made a right on Argonne because, believe it or not, I was coming from my chiropractor, Dr. Steve, up in Towson. And I put it into Google Maps. And I'm like, I wonder how it's going to send me to Gertrude's. Because I'm thinking, how am I going to go? Am I going to end up Perry Parkway? I'm going to take Lock Raven? Going to take how am I going to Charles Street? How am I going to get here?
So and you it took Argonne Drive to where?
Over to Charles. Right up here to the north, right up by Hopkins.
Oh, yeah.
By the campus.
Yeah, yeah.
Guilford, basically.
Yeah.
But I went from, like, Alameda, East Baltimore kind of thing, behind the stadium, or what I always call it, behind the Y now, over here, and I'm thinking, how often in my life do I go on a street in Baltimore that I've never been on?
Right.
And I was like, I'm gonna take pictures of these houses.
I was on a street a couple of years ago that I'd never been on, and I've been reporting and writing about Baltimore for almost 50 years. Gutman Avenue.
Have you ever heard of Gutman Avenue?
It's near Exeter Hall, East Baltimore, like south of 25th Street. But you wouldn't know it, and I don't know there was a Gutman Avenue, and then it turns out that John Shields had his grandmother or somebody lived on Gutman Avenue. So there's another John Shields connection. So anyway.
Dan Rogers is here. So your play, you've done two different plays,
two
right?
Two plays, this will be the third one.
Mean City, Baltimore 1966. I had a little bit of fun. I had my Oriole belt buckle. I whipped it out for John Hoey. I'll take it. I got to be careful with this because it was a kid's belt buckle. This is a 1971 collection. So I got about 15 of these from different teams now.
That's neat.
This is an Oriole belt buckle. You got Brooks and Frank on here, and I saw the Rubenstein when they signed Pete Alonso started throwing the Frank Robinson thing around. My
comparing
last name's Aparicio, Dan, because the 1966 Orioles probably are the reason I'm breathing and alive right now, because it brought my father here from Venezuela with a certain short Venezuelan shortstop that came here in 1964 in a trade. So the reason I literally exist...
Your father came... to Baltimore with Louis?
Correct. My father, Louis, brought two people to America with him. My father, my father's brother Omar, and Omar knew all the reporters in town because Omar was the wine sommelier at the Chesapeake restaurant when you arrived here in the early 70s, mid 70s. Yeah.
Wow.
So,
wow, that's how your father got to Baltimore.
My father got to
Louis
Baltimore.
Louis was traded from the White Sox.
Correct.
Wow.
I found a story in one of the New York papers, It doesn't exist anymore. One of the Post-American, one of the names of the New York paper, that Louis was quoted in there as saying that he was so much happier in Baltimore because he could bring his family to America. I don't think Bill Veeck was helping him.
Oh,
I think Hofberger helped him. My stories on Frank is that Hofberger helped, that the Orioles helped him live in a better neighborhood, that he had dealt with so much racism in Cincinnati, that when he came to Baltimore, he wanted to live in a better neighborhood.
Actually,
do you know the story better?
Yeah, it's part of the play.
Okay.
Actually, he had less trouble in Cincinnati than he had here.
Okay.
Because his wife, Barbara Robinson, spent a good amount of time traveling around with one of Jerry Hofberger, who owned the Orioles, one of his employees, trying to find a house in a white neighborhood.
That was the story I know. He was trying to live in a better neighborhood. That's what I said.
Well, he's trying to live in a... According to the biography I read, he didn't have as much trouble in Cincinnati. They weren't
The redlining effect of it, or just the overall the whole thing?
Finding a house where they wanted to live freely. I guess they didn't face as much discrimination there. So here, Barbara,
you can't live there. That's the way it was.
They could not find a house to rent. This is the first year he came over in '66. The trade was in December of '65. Barbara was looking for a house here while Frank was at spring training, and she could not find a house in a white neighborhood that would rent to her.
March of 1966, to put that into perspective.
It would have been that time, But Hofberger intervened. I think the mayor at the time, Theodore McKeldin, had something to do with it, and they ended up finding a house in Ashburton, which was still at the time a mixed neighborhood. It wasn't. It was a little bit black, a little bit white. Some Jewish people lived there. White flight had already started in the city, and the city was very segregated.
And riots weren't far off from that, right?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing. That's why I got into this story about 1966. First, I was curious about whether the city could handle a play about. I could write a play about the Orioles of '66. But it turned out there was a much bigger story there, because there was a lot going on in the city under this mayor, McKeldin, the last Republican mayor of Baltimore, that I just wasn't aware of. When I got to town in the 70s, the older reporters were still talking about the 68 riot that was really bad in Baltimore, 68. But, you know, there were riots in other cities in 65, 66, 67 as racial tensions were heating up. But it didn't happen here. In 66, it got a little rough. There was a push for open housing in the city and a lot of resistance to it. That's part of the story of the play. I don't want to give it all away, but what I discovered was there was a lot more going on in Baltimore besides the Orioles winning the pennant that year. And of course, when you mention 66 to people who were around then, the first thing they think of is the Orioles winning the World Series 4 straight over the Dodgers, right? They don't think about all this other stuff.
Marked my childhood, because I grew up in a house with the last name of Aparicio. My cousin played on that team.
Yeah, I can understand why you would.
My Aparicio, but my father that raised me in East Baltimore. Yeah. He's not an Aparicio.
Yeah.
Loved the fact that I was an Aparicio, but he loved baseball. And the 66 Orioles were a much bigger part of my conversation in my childhood than, let's say, either 58 or 59 Colts, and my dad revered them too.
Yeah, right.
But 66, and there was something about Kennedy's assassination that really rocked my father's world, and my father lost a son in 69. But I always heard about the 68 riots. I was born in October of 68 at Church Home Hospital. The riots were in April of 68.
They followed the death of Martin Luther King.
April 6th through the 14th of 68.
It went on for a long time.
Literally a year and a half from the minute they won the World Series. 18 months later was when the riots happened.
Right.
Okay, so I'm trying to get my timeline together.
There was a different mayor by then, too. The mayor I focus on in my play, McKeldin, a lot of people don't know much about him. He's kind of been forgotten, but he was kind of a cool mayor. He was a liberal Republican who cared about civil rights and tried to balance things, tried to push for open housing, and he met resistance there. And he was an interesting man. He had been governor for two terms.
What made him a Republican during that era where they're putting George Wallace up, right? Literally, right? On that side,
No, Wallace ran in the Democratic primary.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Yeah. But I'm talking about racism in the 60s in general.
Yeah.
How did a Republican get How is it popular here? I'm just trying to understand.
Well,
that.
The tradition of Republicans, remember, that's the party of Lincoln, right?
Sure.
So that's sort of the.
Later.
Yeah, 100 years later. So that's like the remnant of that Republican Party, which was the party of Lincoln. And still, McKeldin and Eisenhower and people like that revered Lincoln and that heritage. So they weren't all what you see today with Republicans, which are, you know, strident extreme conservatism.
I don't know who was behind the redlining here. I mean, other than racist people, didn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. If you're white, you were against that.
Yeah,
that didn't draw the line. Right?
Baltimore had a long history of segregation, but they passed a law in 1910 that basically said white people can't live in black neighborhoods and black people can't live in white neighborhoods. And it goes back even further than that. But actually, it had a law passed in 1910 formally segregating the city. The law specifically said that if a neighborhood was more than 50% white, a black person could not live there. And if a neighborhood was more than 50% black, a white person could not. Did I just repeat myself?
Yes,
I'm
sorry. Something like that.
I meant the other way around. The other way around. Basically, that was not de facto segregation. That was statutory segregation. So the city had a long history of that. But you know, and it didn't really heat up until the 60s when the push came with the civil rights movement. People said, we want to live better. We want better jobs. The police force is all white. We need to have black police officers. And McKeldin, actually, this guy, when he was governor in the 50s, was appointing blacks to judgeships, to commissionerships, to various state positions. He was way ahead of the Democrats, really. And the remarkable thing...
that begets a Thurgood Marshall to happen, right?
I guess. Yes.
Right,
yeah.
Opportunities for African-Americans in this city, right?
Yeah,
in that
yeah.
period of time, right?
Yeah. But it, you know,
just to get an education.
But it was
too,
hard.
Right?
Yeah, just to get an education. It was hard, though. So another thing that's revealing, at 1966, there was a governor's race in Maryland. And the Democratic candidate was a racist Dixiecrat named George Mahoney, who ran against the idea of open housing, that you under the Civil Rights Act, could not discriminate when you went to rent or sell a property to somebody. And Mahoney ran with the theme, your home is your castle, protected. I mean, it's like clear racist appeal.
Well, this is right? when Baltimore County came about in that era, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Baltimore County grew during that time. The city was just starting to lose population. In 66, the city still had more than 900,000 residents. But then you look at that history, we're down to below 600,000 now, you know. And in the 70s, in the 80s, it accelerated even more.
Well, I've had two Baltimore County executive prospects on last week talking about people leaving Baltimore County now, right? Tax base, schools,
yeah.
It's shrinking.
Yeah,
less
where are they
are
going?
that's what I say. Pennsylvania, Carroll County, I don't know. But yeah. Dan Rodericks is here. The play is No Mean City, Baltimore 1966. So
yeah. It's on stage in March.
So three plays for you in your this point in your life where you and I have poured out souls about sex, drugs, and rock and roll, and Eric Bogosian, and
yeah.
like you know, and what your vibe as a thespian, as a writer, as a stage producer, and the people you bring in. First play was you like, I got a soul for Baltimore, and I got a couple of stories to tell. I'm going to weave them in. You made me laugh. You made me cry. I brought everybody in my family here 2 years ago. Then you did the courtroom thing because you had been a court reporter, and you had seen some wacky-ish, and you wanted to write sort of poignant, somewhat funny, all of your stuff has an edge to make you laugh and cry. That's your style. Where did this one come? Because I get together with you every 6 months and we break bread. We've even gone fishing together, Rodericks and I. Had coffee together over 40 years. Where does the thing, when you and I were fly fishing 4 years ago, you're thinking about the first play, you're doing the second play. When does this hit you? Are you having a coffee one morning out in Western Maryland or fly fishing and saying, 66, Orioles, play, Frank, racism, and then start to write from that?
Yeah.
Where's that seed come from, Dan?
Well, so I'm a curious guy. I'm always curious about almost everything. And because I didn't grow up here, I've always felt like there's a lot to learn about Baltimore, right? And so I was curious about what else was going on in the city in the years just before the riots. You know, you mentioned the 68 riots. What was life like here in 67 and 66? And I focused on 66. And what I wanted to do was write a play more conventional than the first two. The first two were like all my own stories, right? They were based on my columns. And this is a little different. These are events that happened when I was 12 years old. And I want to show you something.
All right. So you were 12 years old and you were
in Massachusetts.
You're in Massachusetts.
Right.
And I was thinking Rhode Island.
I was a Red Sox fan, right? Okay. Right? So, but I read Sports Illustrated magazine. I actually had a subscription to Sports Illustrated. And I remember, I was 12 years old, and it wasn't really.
Look at how young Brooks looks in that. Yeah. Look at how young Brooks looks.
That's it. But what hit me about this is there's two guys named Robinson. And one is black, and one is white. And all this civil rights stuff is going on. These two guys are working together, and they won the World Series.
So now in front of black and white people at the stadium, too. I
mean, mostly white, but
fair enough.
But it started to change. The reason Hofberger wanted, one of the reasons they wanted Frank Robinson was because they wanted the Orioles to expand their fan base.
Red Sox weren't taking on African Americans about that time, right? Kind of, sort of.
Nor
were the Redskins. There were teams literally in the 50s. And I mean, Art Modell famously, think about however you want, he was one of those people that was not a racist and really fought against racism with George Preston Marshall and different people that he had actually befriended in that fraternity. But this was Muhammad Ali, right? This was 68 and Mexico City.
Yeah,
right. I mean,
right,
so this
60s.
Was, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot more awareness. But I was, as a kid, I was always struck by the fact. Maybe here people say, oh, yeah, okay, Brooks and Frank, we know that story. But I was 12 years old in 1966, and I thought, that's pretty cool.
But the romantic in me would also say, well, Lenny Moore played with Jim Parker, who played with Johnny U, played with Raymond Barry. They were not integrated.
Right.
You know what I mean? Lenny
right.
Moore would give you some stories about being here and Big Daddy Lipscomb and all those kind of things.
And this is almost 20 years since Jackie Robinson, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
But the Orioles didn't have a black star. The Orioles had never had a black star.
This was the beginning of that with Frank Robinson. And Orioles still, at 66, had the fewest black players.
So in 1958, they were inclined to stink, but we can't have black. You know, we're going to have white players. I think about the baseball cards of that Triandos and, you know, all of those players.
Yeah, yeah.
And Louis was Hispanic, and they didn't have a whole lot of that either in the 50s and 60s.
No teams did.
Well, if you were black and you were Cuban, they'd let you in baseball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's how baseball worked in some sort of weird way, about the color of your skin. Louis was okay, but in the 40s or 50s, not so much. But by the time 66, so this happens, you're thinking about black and white and baseball.
So I started doing some research about 66.
It's a term paper. Okay.
So I wanted to write a more conventional play where it isn't just based on my stories. I'm going to go back to that, by the way. I have two other plays in mind that are sort of like a one-man show telling stories. I am going to go back to that format because people like it. But I wanted to try this where I would create scenes and dialogue.
You're not in the play.
I serve as a narrator.
Narrator. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah,
okay.
Narrator, reporter who I start off as a narrator and then I slowly become a reporter asking questions. And we have a solid cast and rehearsals start in January and the play runs from March 5th to March 15th, right here at the BMA.
Well, I saw the cast and everybody getting together. So you're in rehearsal now.
We had a table read. We start with a table read.
Okay.
Which is the first time you get everybody together that you've cast in a play, and they just read the script right straight through. And it's the first time you get to hear how these people, how it sounds, what the actor's interpretation of the roles are. And it's pretty exciting when you hear it. Yeah.
I'm going to teach you AI, and you could pop it in there, and you'd know ahead of time,
use ChatGPT play the different characters?
It would just make the sounds for you. If you could have it,
it probably
sound
would.
Like Frank if you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Put Frank's voice in there if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Well, it's funky, man.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm a month into it.
If you got to try live theater. Looking at your folks out there.
I
got to come.
I told everybody to come to this play.
Well, isn't just my, the experience of live theater. And by the way, we wanted to do a student matinee.
Okay.
So, because I think middle school, high school kids who don't know any of this stuff, maybe they know some of it. We're trying to get them there because this is a history. This is a historic drama.
Okay.
And so I've appealed to high schools and middle schools to bring their kids for free. We're trying to do a free student matinee for 350 students. On March 11th, Wednesday matinee.
So I can say the theme is Baltimore 1966, race, baseball, the Orioles,
politics,
and life in Baltimore. Yeah. Sort of yeah. what life was like.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? The biggest
look at your ornithologically correct. Yeah.
You know the biggest compliment I get from doing this is I learned something I didn't know about Baltimore.
Okay.
Either from people who've lived here a long time, when they say that, that's cool. Or someone who just moved here in the last 10, 20 years and didn't know that and didn't know this. That to me, that's the biggest compliment I get for these stories.
So yeah. last night I had my middle school music teacher, Mr. Calvin Statham. He wow. taught 59 years in
what's,
Baltimore
what
County.
What school was that?
Halliburton Middle. And he turns 85 now. Last week wow. he did Christmas caroling. I'll take you next year down in Edgemere. 300 people in a church that only sat 200, all singing Christmas songs with Mr. Statham on the piano. All of his former students. He taught in Pikesville.
Wow.
Oh, he could give you stories about race. He was the yeah. only black teacher I had in Halliburton and Archie Bunker, Dundalk, 1979. And he said yesterday they sent me there. For what he said, whatever that means, they sent me there. So he taught 59 years in Baltimore County, and then a man named George Shulin, who's also an East Side legend, taught 46 years as a science teacher in my middle school and high school. So I had George on about 3 years ago. He came to Drug City to do the show because he was our baseball manager at Dundalk High School. He's a science teacher. Everybody loved George. I never had him as a teacher. He wound up teaching 46 years, and he came on the show 3 years ago with Luke as a hoot. Like, they were just sitting in the way you sat with other people and hanging on my show. And Luke and I were talking baseball, and George talked baseball, and George was like, you know, I went to the 66 World Series, right? And I'm like, what? Yeah, so I got my ticket stub. I'm like, once you hear that somebody, you said to me, when you, yeah. people that lived through that
lived
era,
through it, yeah.
George Shulin was on the show yesterday. I'll remember everything about him, but the fact that he went to a World Series game in 1966 and has a ticket stub, that has some special value to a kid named Aparicio. You know what I mean? It really does.
Yep.
I could not find my dad's 66 World Series tickets. I looked a little bit. I have them.
All right.
I just couldn't find them. So
this is a menu. This is a menu for the Hit and Run Club.
Oh, I knew exactly what it was. look at that.
And you should look at the prices of
Hold on. Let me. Can I guess?
Yeah, go ahead.
Can I guess? Yeah. All right, hold on. So what was on the menu here? A crab cake in 1966.
At the World Series.
At the Hit and Run Club.
During the World Series. World Series
probably
price.
Probably a buck and a half is what I'm thinking. $1.60 for corned beef.
Yeah.
Sirloin steak, $4.
Deluxe crab cakes,
$2.50. Succulent crab meat done to a golden brown served with tartar sauce.
Excuse me, in Boston that's tata sauce.
Tata.
Yeah. That's got to be the World Series price, $2.50.
$4 for the sirloin steak, thick and juicy, tender and charbroiled to your taste. All entrees served on a home plate. That's baked with French fried potatoes. Look at that, man.
All right, here's a ticket. I want you to guess.
Ham sandwich, 85 cents. Yeah. I'll have two.
I want you to guess what a ticket would cost to the third game of the World Series at Memorial Stadium. This is a lower box.
Lower box.
Section 3E5, seat 4. This was the mayor's seat.
$9.50.
$12.
That's a real deal. Don't beat that ticket. That ticket's worth hundreds of dollars. Be nice to that ticket.
It's $12.
I said $11.50 or said 9?
Yeah, you said $9.50.
$9.50, all right. I have several of these myself. I have my dad's ticket. So this is in the mayor's box. All right, go ahead. Keep going.
And this was given to me by Mayor McKeldin's family.
You should put this in glass, dude. This is
I know. It's really cool. And the magazine, too. So this, I think, was the mayor's placeholder.
Mayor McKeldin. So there was a McKeldin Square at the Harbor,
but it's a picture.
Right? Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll talk about it.
There's a picture of Chuck Thompson on the mayor's.
That is Chuck Thompson.
Yeah. And if you open up the inside.
Go to war, Miss Agnes. Ain't the beer cold here?
So.
Best wishes, Ted McKeldin Jr., Chuck Thompson.
Ted McKeldin Jr.
That's Chuck's autograph.
It's Chuck.
That's Chuck's autograph.
So that means, to me, that tells me that the mayor took his son to the World Series. Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
That was the third game. That was the Saturday, and they beat...
Don't beat the edges of that ticket.
Okay.
You're giving me PTSD. All right. PTSD.
Put it inside the magazine.
Put it inside the magazine, yes.
Yeah.
As a collector of things, I don't want to mess that up.
Okay, yeah.
Dan Rodericks is here. I love him to tears. He's now that Jackman's dead, you're now my crazy uncle from the Evening Sun. Is that okay?
That's fine.
By the way, I had a former colleague of yours on this week from Boston. talking about the Patriots. He was the curse guy, former colleague of yours. Dan
Shaughnessy?
Oh,
really? How's he doing?
He's doing great. He's feeling better. He had a little health issue scare a couple years ago. He's coming to town this week for the game. He'll be here for the Patriots-Ravens. Yeah.
He's still with the Globe, right?
He is still with the Globe, absolutely.
He's been there a long time.
Man.
I was at the Sun a long time. I wonder how long he's... Because he worked at the Evening Sun.
78 to 81, I think he said. It's like in that range.
He's pushing that, you know. I don't think he was a columnist the whole time, though. I think he was a baseball beat writer.
He has such great memories of Earl Weaver. And, you know, he said all those teams. He left in like 82 and in 83 they won. You know, he's like, those guys all won after I left. He said, but those were my guys, is what he said.
Yeah.
I remember McGregor and those guys.
Well, he was here for the World Series. 79?
He covered
Dan Shaughnessy, great guy, really great writer, terrific writer.
I mean, and I find on the baseball front, and I've said this, I said this to young Brett Hollander from BAL, and I said this to him when I went to Jimmy Henneman's funeral, another one of our colleagues,
I was hoping Jim would be around to see this play. Yeah. He helped me with it.
Oh, of course he did. Yeah. I mean, his work. Yeah, it was a part of it.
Yeah.
So I saw Brett, and I said, there's so few people that I can talk baseball with that I want to talk baseball with at that kind of level. I've been bugging Dan Connolly to come on. I really only like talking baseball with people who know three-quarters as much as me. You know, like just on a reference basis. So when I get a Dan Shaughnessy on and go baseball – we may be speaking in tongues to some, like you said, you're trying to get young people, and like Katie Griggs is trying to sell tickets for the Orioles and all that.
Yeah.
Like, I see the Orioles through a different scope of having watched them since 1972 and been born into it, where I'm drawn to your play just because it's got Brooks and Frank on it, right? I mean, just literally.
Yeah.
Now, are there characters playing their part?
So
can I play Louie? No,
they make reference to Louie.
Oh,
but
thank
they don't,
you.
The only players you'll
see. Is the name Aparicio in your play?
Absolutely. What are you talking about? Are you kidding?
Listen, I'm a guy that every time Jim Palmer, now that I've been, you know, I've been kicked out for 20 years, Dan. They took my press pass 20 years ago, right?
I know.
So when I hear Jim Palmer on the air just say, you know, back when Aparicio, just to hear him say my name, it means something to me. And you left Palmer off the thing here, but he came a little later, whatnot, as well as
my
Venezuelan.
He was on that team.
But I know he was on that team, but he wasn't the guts and the glue in the way Frank and Brooks, maybe later on he's perceived as he went to the Hall of Fame. But
I think Brooks and Frank were the team leaders, and Palmer was 20.
This is my proof right here.
Palmer was 20 years old.
Yeah, Palmer was not on the cover at that point, so he's a smaller part of your story in 66, I guess, is my point.
Yeah,
right?
Well, he figures into the winning the World Series.
So does Boog. They all did.
Yeah, Boog. Yeah, yeah. It was a great lineup. Really was.
A good team, man. They won.
Yeah, yeah. Who, you know, Dave McNally started the first game. You know, they took him out because he walked three guys in a row. And Mo Drabowski came in and struck out 12 people.
So does your play
batters.
Really go through the world? Does it?
Yeah.
It takes you into
toward the end of the play.
It takes you into the
you
baseball.
Get we pick up. This is probably the most difficult scene to direct and for the actors to pull off, is because it's a rapid fire description of all four games.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll have that'll be a challenge for the cast. Yeah.
Spoiler alert, we won. Dan Rogers is here. The play starts March 5th, right?
March 5th,
that's my dad's birthday.
Is it really?
Oh. March 5th, I've honored March 5th, the first 25 years of my career, was the day I cried and everybody called. It was sort of Father's Day on my show.
Yeah.
Everybody will March 5th would call my show with their stories of their dad. So, you know, so I might be a little messy on March 5th if I get over here.
Because
my dad went to these games, and I have my dad's ticket, and I may have to put that in my lapel.
It's amazing.
You know, I may have to do that.
It's hard to think of it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I would do that.
Yeah.
60 years. I mean, it's kind of hard to wrap your head around 60 years. I mean, 40 years, 50 years. But,
hey, I got something here. I don't mess that ticket up, but the McKelvin thing. McKeldin Square was the center where the fountain was by Harbor Place, or am I wrong about that?
Correct.
Now, you know who was so pissed about that was Bill from Fadley's. I have him
Bill
on
the, Devine?
Bill Devine.
Why?
Because they were tearing it down when they were doing all that.
Yeah.
And it really made him angry. And I, you know, like,
the
on my show.
You're talking about the fountain.
That area, he said, they're tearing down McKeldin. That's a pretty good bill.
Yeah.
Tearing down McKeldin Square. And nobody did more for this city than you know.
See,
so,
he knows. You know, so, he knows something a lot of people don't know.
He said that to me 6-7 years ago when he did the show with me. And now you're coming to me with this. So I do want to learn. I love this stuff, Dan.
One of the things you'll learn is that McKeldin had a lot to do with the what became Harbor Place and in a harbor. Before Schaefer gets all the credit
cleaning
for
cleaning it out so that Schaefer could build it up.
How he got federal money to do it is an interesting story too. Yeah.
What a great city we have, dude.
Oh, I think it's a fascinating city. You know, I mean, that's why I stayed so long and never ran out of material here. Things to write about.
I took a right turn on Argon Drive at the Alameda, and I drove over here, and about 2.5 miles, I feel like I saw just a wild world of Baltimore. Big houses, little houses. Rich
you went
people
by Morgan State University?
A little west of there. But yeah.
I mean, that campus is amazing. Have you been over there?
Yeah, I drive through. I'm at Coco's all the time, so yeah.
Paring Parkway.
I take Paring. I go through the campus every time I go through. Yeah.
I don't know. If you go over there, you'll be shocked at how big it is and how beautiful the buildings are.
I feel that way about Coppin when I go to Coppin. I've been going to Coppin since Fang Mitchell.
Yeah, Coppin's had a lot of beautiful work done there, too.
I mean, there's been a lot of investment here. And, you know, and I had Matt Gallagher on last week from Gold Sector.
Oh, yeah?
Just talking about the holidays and food and the city and city life and lighting the tree. And you come back to the city and, you know, be here at Gertrude's where it's beautiful and all. Ron Cassie has done my show recently, and Max Weiss was on last week. Just about city's renaissance. Like, they did a renaissance Baltimore magazine. Is the city undergoing a renaissance?
Yeah.
Tell me what your eyes see. I agree with you wholeheartedly.
I see a lot of work being done around the city, vacant homes being renovated. I went down to what's now called Baltimore Peninsula.
I don't call it that. I ain't never calling it
Port
that.
Covington?
I ain't never calling it. Thank you. That's where you're...
Just kind of shocked at the amount of residential properties being built there, townhomes and apartment buildings.
I did my show. Wow. I invited you to Deep Pasquale's, and you couldn't make it back in July, right?
Yeah,
I did it without you. No problem. Nancy Longo sat in. We did Fishes.
Oh.
So it's fine. You're, I don't know, she's your consigliere for...
Goomba,
for
whatever, my Goomba, female, what's the female version of Goomba, I don't know.
Consigliere. And Shields is the other one probably for you. Roderick cooks things, he's friends with foodie people. So you didn't do the Pasquale's with me, I did it last week. I went back and did the show there, Max came down. It is an absolute construction zone. I did a whole segment with the Deep Pasquale family about parking and just about like, and I told them that Ed Hale took me in his building before the big building went up, and he had probably the size of this table. There was a whole treatment of what Canton was going to look like. And Ed took me down there probably right when he first got the bank, 30 years ago, 95, 96, 97.
Yeah.
He's like, there'll be a Target over here, and we're going to have a cruise line in here. We're going to have cruise. He had all of these not that he needs the credit, and he's going to run. He's out talking about what he's doing. But I've known Ed forever. That doesn't mean I'm voting for him. And he can come sit and talk to me about why I would vote for him. But he had a vision about over there. And when I'm seeing the cranes there cranking up and all that apartment complex around Deep Pasquale's and around the Target and the Harris Teeter, that's 2 miles from where I grew up in Dundalk, like, you know, east side.
Yeah.
And I see it and I think, who could come here and used to come to Canton, or if Barry Levinson made a movie here 40 years ago and you came back to Canton and looked at it, you would say, this place has had some progress. This place has seen some things happen. Harbor East, and I'm not down with the Sinclair fellas and all that.
Those are places everybody talks about, but, you know, if you go just north of Harbor East, where Perkins Homes used to be, all the redevelopment that's taken place there on the just east of Central Avenue. Have you seen that?
Yes.
I mean, it's pretty amazing, too.
It's coming together. It doesn't happen.
It's amazing.
In a
the scope of it is what's shocking. I was surprised at how many blocks it takes up, that particular redevelopment.
And what about the murder rate? What about crime? I mean,
I had a conversation with Ivan Bates, the state's attorney.
Good.
And I wanted to get at, you know, What's making the difference here? Why are there fewer shootings? Why are there fewer homicides? And it's because, you remember Fred Bielfeld, the police commissioner, used to talk about bad guys with guns. You know, the focus has to be repeat violent offenders, the ones you find on the street who have guns or shouldn't have guns because they're already felons, they've already been convicted. Well, in Maryland, there's a 5-year mandatory sentence for a felon in possession of a gun. And the state's attorney's office in Baltimore is taking that very seriously. So if they have, say, 600 cases like that, right, in a year's time, 2/3 of them are gone for 5 years mandatory. So that's something that wasn't being done before under the previous state's attorney. So you can say, okay, that means that at least for 5 years, those guys...
300 people a year, 400 people a year, yeah, every year for 5 years that were the ones that were going to create the murder, the havoc.
They're not
they're
here.
They're not here anymore.
They're off the street.
Yes. Yeah.
So that is... I'm not saying that's the only reason this has happened, which is a good thing, but it's one. It's got to be one of the major reasons, the focus on repeat violent offenders and getting them off the street. So, yeah, that's good. Are you kidding? I mean, we had 8 straight years of 300-plus homicides. Very depressing time in the city, starting in 2015, all through Marilyn Mosby's 2 terms. We were over 300 homicides a year. And, you know, Bates came in, and within a year or so, we started to see it go down. Like, how did that happen? Whoa. But and then now he's in his, third year, and the focus has been on getting these repeat violent offenders off the streets. And plus, you have the federal, you know, you have coordination with federal and state law enforcement, too. That's all good. By the way, speaking of food, I was going to mention that we're coming up on Christmas.
You're fishing. You're doing the Feast of the Fishes?
I do the Feast of the Seven Fishes, but I just wanted to say it's costing more this year. You know, Trump says, the affordability, it's a hoax. It's not a hoax. So... his tariff has finally affected the Feast of the Seven Fishes. I'll tell you how. It's the Italian Feast of the Seven Fishes. It involves bacala, which is a salted codfish that is reconstituted and used in various dishes as part of the Feast of the Seven Fishes. Well, that salted cod, it comes from Canada, right? So this year, I went to Trinacria to buy a couple of flanks of the salted codfish, the bacala. And it was expensive. it was not what I expected. And I guess I should have anticipated that because of the tariff situation. So Feast of Seven Fishes is going to cost a little more this year. Yeah.
At the risk of having my Baltimore card taken away from me, I embarrassed myself again. Last week I had Matt Gallagher down at Fadley's. And, you know, Matt likes to eat, and he talks about these is it something pole, knee pole, that where they do the smoked mussels in Holland's Ferry, right? So every year he does Feast of Fishes and does these things,
yeah.
Right? So he told me about...
What's the word you were looking for?
I don't know what the word is. I'll come up with it. Don't put me on the spot.
All right. They smoke
the mussels.
Mussels?
Yeah, smoke mussels.
Oh, that sounds good.
So I'll come up with a name for it. Matt Gallagher talks about it. So,
yeah.
So Matt's talking to me, and I'm like, I said the word wrong. You've already said the word. Trinacria?
Trinacria, yeah.
I called it Trinacria, and I've never been there. And I'm in Fadley's, and I'm with Gallagher, and I'm like, Trinacria? He's like, Trinacria.
Yeah.
And then we fade back like this from the set at Fadley's at the New Lexington Market.
Yeah.
There's a Trinacria
pizza
from
shop.
Where yeah. the coat rack is.
Yeah, they have a nice pizza.
Literally.
The pizza's good. Yeah.
So, and Damie beat me up. She was very upset with me for mispronouncing Trinacria.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to...
Have you been there?
I've never been to Trinacria.
Oh.
And,
oh.
See that look he just gave
me?
I understand why
you like DePasquale's. It's very good.
No, this is like you're taking my card away, my Baltimore card away.
Oh,
so I've never been
there. Right.
That's not right. I got to go visit those nice
pubs. All right.
Good?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
I see
and it's old school. You go in there.
There's like sausage hanging and stuff, right? Yeah, serious, right?
Yeah, wooden floors and fresh pasta. And I just bought Trinacria's homemade lasagna noodles, and they're ribbed. They're ribbed. It holds the sauce on better.
Damie told me, Damie Hahn, who owns Fadley's, I've already mentioned her dad, I get a little drink too, told me, get the meatballs. So
yeah.
That's what she told me.
Yeah,
so
they have like really nice ravioli, and they have their own sauce. And
I'm going to go do it all because I was with the DePasquale's boys last week, and they have unbelievable everything there.
They have more prepared food than Trinacria.
Well, it's huge too, right?
Yeah.
So. But I was there, and I told him, last time I was here, I took your pasta, and I took a Amici sauce over it. Hey, what's wrong with our sauce? I'm like, everybody's got sauce. It's fine.
Yeah.
I've been eating Amici sauce for 30 years. They're my people. They give it to me in vats. I bring it home. It's
give it to me in vats?
It's gravy. They give it to me.
In a big container? Oh, yeah?
In the regatta. And the ricotta cheese
container.
They're big white plastic things. I mean, so I take it home. My wife scoops it out. We suck it all up, put it in the freezer, and I got 8 bags of sauce.
Yeah.
So that's my, it's my Sunday gravy.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
my Sunday gravy. So I got to tell you this, two stories for you. First off, that I am really Italian. And when I did the show at Deep Pasquale's.
You're really Italian?
Aparicio is my father's cousin.
Yeah, yeah.
My mother was Arena. My grandfather was off the boat, Italian, right? So, and I'll talk a lot about that because I didn't really like him, my grandfather. You know, I didn't. You asked me about Christmas alone. I had a weird. I still have a weird family, and it's okay. I'm normalized on it. But you're laughing at me.
No, it's funny. You normalize your weird family. It's good. That's a good quote.
Yeah.
I would use that as a quote. Yeah.
Well, I mean, we
if
all.
I was writing a story about
everybody's going to be with their family this week, and you got to admit, we all have It's unique.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm at Deep Pasquale's last week, and during the summer when I invited you, and you couldn't make it, and we did something else, I think. And someone heard it, me telling my story of having Italian heritage, and invited me to speak to the Italian Associated Charities. So this is 90 Italian dudes, all not on my side of the political spectrum, or yours for the most part. And I got a lot of compliments and like feedback on all that. But the Italian part of the heritage has led me to trying to understand baccalà. So I was down at Deep Pasquale's, and he's only baccalà. I knew Bobby baccalà.
The baccalà is also it's in Spain. It's in Portugal.
Compared it to anchovies, and he said, "No, it's not like anchovies.
No, it's codfish.
It's salted.
It is salted. It's a white meat codfish.
That's salted or smoked.
Yeah.
Weirds me out. You know what I mean? Like it just Nancy Longo talked about smoked crab cakes, and I'm like. It just doesn't.
Oh, I wouldn't smoke a crab cake.
Right, but Nancy does.
But the salt flavor, when you cure something with salt, like ham becomes, you know, prosciutto, right?
Right.
And fish, sardines, herring, cod, all.
I want to try it.
Get
I've
this
never
treatment
had
it. To preserve it. You know, you don't need to do this anymore. You can freeze cod. This was done to preserve cod for the winter for a long time, for months, right?
Right.
You don't need to do it anymore. The thing is, it leaves a flavor that is that people like. And
I want to try it.
You have to soak it a lot. That's it. So I buy the baccalà.
And you soak it again.
I soak it for 3 days. And I change the water until it starts to soften. And you get most of the salt out of it. But the remnant flavor is very good.
That's only one fish. There's six more.
It's like a flank of cod about this big. Yeah. I wish I had a picture to show you.
Yeah, so Ivan Bates, last thing for you, because I did want to tell you this.
Yeah.
Because the reason I'm even talking about this is because I did that Italian thing at Pappas, and right next door, I saw Ivan Bates give his hour-long, he was on stage at a Connects event, networking event that Katie Griggs is doing on Elvis's birthday next month. So I went up for that thing, and I heard Ivan give his whole thing. He hasn't been on the show yet. I'm trying to organize it to get him on. And at the end of the end, it's, you know, any questions from the crowd or whatever. A guy stands up, they had 250 people there, and he said, Ivan, I live in the county, can't vote for you. What can I do to support you? And I'm going to give Ivan a little bit of a hard time kidding around about this. He said, literally his quote was, take a chance on the city again. Come back to the city.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, take a chance? I'm here in the city right now. I was here yesterday. I was here for.
Well, that's you. He's talking about the people in the suburbs.
He's talking about the people in that room that were primarily Republican.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself.
They think that when they cross the city line, they're immediately going to be assaulted by somebody.
Yeah. One of your colleagues, who I have a lot of respect, I'm sure you do, Jane Miller, came on about 4 years ago when all the murders were up and when Brandon just came in. And I think it might even be before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And she sat in with another one of your colleagues from the BAL television side. But nonetheless, she said, I shut it down. When people start shit-talking Baltimore, I just shut it down and say, I'm not having it in the city. We're not going to talk about the city. We're going to talk about supporting the city. And I think Ivan Bates saying that to folks, like, take a chance. I thought that's it. I'm going to kid around about that. I think I'm taking chances every day. But the perception and even the conversations I hear in the washroom when I go to these events and different places about, I'm not going back to the city. I hope we can get through that. You know, because
I don't know. Freddie Gray was 10 years ago, you know. There was a lot of that right after Freddie Gray, right? When people saw what happened that day. That was 10 years ago. And people who are just going to stay away from the city, I don't know what to tell you. This is the biggest city in the state. You may live out in the suburbs someplace, but as goes the city, as goes the state. I think you don't. You can't have a tottering, failing city. You need to support it, even if you don't live here. By the way, Baltimore is one of only two cities that are not in a county.
Jacksonville, right?
No, I think it's St. Louis.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. It stands alone.
Jacksonville is the largest city by mass. That's what it is.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, that's what it is. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
So this makes a difference because, you know, Cook County, for instance, Chicago is a part of Cook County. So if you live in the greater Cook County, you're still invested in the city. The city is part of you, right? So imagine if Baltimore was part of Baltimore County, for instance, right? There'd be less separation. There'd be less a feeling of that's over
there.
And people would be more invested in what happens in the city.
I did my show last Friday in Halethorpe, and these folks...
Gateway to Arbutus. Halethorpe.
And Lansdowne, from what I understand. So, and the Hun sign is located probably technically in Halethorpe.
In Lansdowne? Oh, okay, maybe it's
probably
Halethorpe.
Technically right, it's in Halethorpe.
Look.
So I can't say that I spent a lot of time in Halethorpe. I think of the airport, Linthicum, and all those sort of suburbs over there.
Yeah.
And I got invited, and they invited me. They wrote to me and said, we'd love to have the show here. And I'm like, Honey's Bar and Grill. So I popped it into the Google, and I'm like... I wonder if that's in the city or the county, right? Well, in the Google map, I'm like, it's close.
Yeah.
I don't really, but they said Halethorpe, so that's got to be the county, right?
Yeah.
So I looked, it's literally, my car is further away than the county line is from Honey's.
Oh,
and
really?
And there is this city and county. I mean, your customers are both. I grew up on the county city line in East Baltimore, you know?
Yeah.
I had a house on Kane Street in the city. I grew up on Bank Street in the county. We're a mile apart. I never thought about it in any other way than they don't have cable television and we do in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about, well, my parents wouldn't want me to be in a city because they wouldn't want me to go to Patterson. They wouldn't want me to go to a city school. And that's in 1980, right? 1985, that I would be better served to be in a county school to my parents. But other than that, I never thought, well, I'm not going to go to Canton tonight. I'm not going to go to Fells Point tonight. I'm not...
Yeah.
We just didn't think like
that. Yeah, I don't think
we
like
that. We just didn't think like that.
You know, I in doing the research for this play, I, you know, struck by how much division there was in the city, how much segregation, how much discrimination, and people started running away. You know, the white flight really kicked into gear, followed by some black flight, but mostly it was white flight. And I thought, it's just such a shame that, people didn't put their kids in school with black students. You know why there wasn't, why people fought integration or ran away from it. I think we would have been a lot better off if more people had stayed in the city.
Damn, we had a governor 8 years ago that killed the red line on racism and nothing else. I mean, like, you know, and sat here on the set and basically disguised it as something else. Hey, I ran on it.
I know.
That's what wanted me to do.
Well, that's another thing is it makes you think, I think the play will make people think that, you know, how much have things changed?
Imagine if they had built a proper subway in 1966 and in 1982 when it opened up, it actually had wings to Dundalk and White Marsh like it should.
Yeah.
You know, like it absolutely does in every other function.
Yeah, they dropped the ball on that one a long time ago.
I just think sort of the political courage it ever took New York 150 years ago to build a transportation system under a city.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the money... And saying, we're putting all this in, and it's not for you, it's for your kids.
Right.
I'll sign up for that.
Right.
There was something about signing up for making life better for your kids
that
made it all better for all of us, right?
Right. There was
a kid that rode the T in Boston, literally, right?
Right. Yeah. There's this idea of the common good, you know, the common good.
Right.
The
commonwealth.
The commonwealth, the common welfare. That's the way that those generations thought, you know, right?
Well, I thought that until you write a 66 thing here and it's all about racism. So maybe they weren't thinking about that to some degree here, at least here, you know.
No,
about
it's the Baltimore has a rough history, man.
Yeah. Love you, Dan.
All right. Thank you
Merry
again
Christmas,
for
happy
your support.
Holidays.
Yeah. Buona Natale.
I cannot wait to see it. Yeah. And I'm thrilled that my last name and my cousin are at least a small character in
your
play.
Yeah.
No Mean City, Baltimore 1966. Yeah. The play opens at his new play by Baltimore columnist and artist and playwright Dan Rodericks. It's his third play. Tickets are on sale now. YouHaveNoIdea.org, which is the name. Is that one coming back?
That's
or
right.
Is it over?
No. So next year is going to be really busy. We're doing this play in March. We're doing Baltimore You Have No Idea again next December, a year from now.
That's your Christmas play.
You know, it's become like
train.
It's a Christmas play.
I don't see a Christmas train without crying because of you big hog.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're going to do that again. And you might be hearing about something else I'm going to do in between those two things.
Is it going to make me laugh and cry?
Yeah.
I'm going to come see it then. Dan Rodericks is here. Go follow him online. The 66 Orioles. I broke out my 71 belt. Man, we did it all here. We did Frank, Brooks, Louie, Gertrude, Feast of the Seven Fishes.
Bacala.
Bobby Bacala. It's the only Bacala I knew was Bobby Bacala. He's swimming with the fishes. Merry Christmas, everybody, out there. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. Dan's going to get a number 79 candy cane cash ticket. I smell like Santa Claus. My bag, down the chimney we come. It is the most wonderful time of the year. We've got the gingerbread house here where Gertrude's. Every time I come here, they class the show up a little bit. We're at the BMA. We're over here with all the scholarly folks at Johns Hopkins on having fun. And dance plays right here. It's a beautiful little theater upstairs.
Yeah.
And if you haven't been at the BMA, I don't know what's holding you back because it's not the price.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
The Amy Sherrill exhibit that's going on now is really something to see. Yeah.
Get down here. Yeah. The BMA, on the first rainy, cold, awful day when you're like looking to kill a couple hours, you're like, something in Baltimore I've never done before. Come park your car here. You walk in here, see the gallery, get yourself. You have to get a reservation in this joint because John just getting a table here is like, but come to Gertrude's. It's really. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah,
and you gave me this relationship
good.
With my own cousin. So
yeah, it's great.
That's a small Timor story. Back for more. I don't know if John – I think John's going to come on. We're going to talk some fishes and we're going to talk some food. I'm trying to get him in my refrigerator right now. And this will get my Baltimore card back. I have 1 pound of Ostrowski's kielbasa.
Okay.
I had the kielbasa last week at Di Pasquale's. Darren – go down to Di Pasquale. His kielbasa was great.
Yeah.
But I bought it and I got sauerkraut. So now I'm saying to John – I know what I'm going to do with that, but what should be on the rest of the table for me?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some bacala, or maybe
No. You don't want to mix that with the sauerkraut. With that. I would go with the. I just did that recently, and I baked my own beans. I did Boston baked beans with kielbasa and sauerkraut.
Were you alone?
And brown bread. I baked brown bread with
it. I can do that. My wife gets home Friday. I'm sleeping
what
alone
do you mean,
right
was
now.
I alone?
Baked beans and sauerkraut together.
Yeah. Oh, it's good. Good for the biome. Yeah, very good for the digestion. Yeah.
I learned this. Well, I don't want to say it's too bad.
A lot of fiber.
I had a colonoscopy 3 weeks ago at GBMC, and they found a precancerous polyp. So I'm telling everybody they got to get checked.
Yeah, yeah.
And after said thing, they said sauerkraut and just
different. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
especially sauerkraut. And
they said
kimchi. Kimchi is another good one. Yeah.
Right. I love Korean food, but I'm not a kimchi guy. All right, we're back for more. We're at Gertrude's. We're having fun. And I'm going to be joined by former Major League Baseball player Casper Wells at some point. We're also going to talk some more fish and some good stuff here. Wearing cap stuff. Baseball guys wearing hockey stuff. It's getting weird around here.
Oh, you're a Caps fan. Me too.
I expected to see a Towson thing somewhere, you know, proud alum and big leaguer. We're back for more here at Gertrude's. They are classing me up. It is the holidays, and it is the most wonderful time of the year because I'm spending time with people I love. I appreciate that. Back for more here
Thank you,
at the BMA. We're at Gertrude's. Stay with us.